Actually, I can probably say through the whole panel. Is it very much any kind of
what kind of computer stuff's been going on with this thing?
Okay.
We're live down in front.
Okay, if you want, yeah, go ahead and take it off. Go ahead. Just speak.
It's a beginning. All of my meetings have started out small. Yay.
Later.
Oh, well.
Don't worry about it. Just go.
Okay, for everybody who doesn't know, I am Fuller.
Hey, Fuller.
Introduce yourself.
All right. I am Lothar.
And I'm Kenner.
Yeah.
Or Cam.
Yeah. I think part of our problem is open gaming's right now in the computer gaming room, so all the kids are over there playing, you know, wasting their minds playing Quake and killing each other.
Well, naturally, gaming takes precedence over absolutely everything.
Hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we just get some extension cords with these microphones and just do the panel over there?
That'd work.
Do we have any extension cords?
Nothing like that. All right.
Not that long enough. Oh, well. Hey, Johnny X, you want to stay? Give input?
He can. He's going to Nashville.
Oh, well. Yeah. Oh, well. We have deep people.
So where's open gaming? Where's that?
Just general play any game you want, open computer gaming.
Where's that?
Right across the hall. If you look out the door, you can see them gaming in there. That's the hall.
Mm-hmm.
I could just go and flip off the power switch, and that would kill all of them, but oh, well. I'm not that mean.
Of course you are.
I mean, I have this perfect little halo above my
You head. Thought it. That's enough.
Yeah. How do we want to start this? Since most of what we've done in the past is Q&A a lot, just general talk about what's been going on, general things that have been in the news about miners, hacking, technology, education, stuff like that. Sort of a conglomeration. And get people just started interested in talking and learning what they can do. It's always a problem when you have more people in the panel than there are.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
I don't have Cat here. Cat can go out and yell for everybody.
Rumor is, I guess I can start it off. Were there any specific hacking incidents that you might have been involved with in school? What original question?
That was Lotho's question to the audience.
That was a question.
Has anybody here ever done any hacking of sorts? Or okay.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, that, definitely. Should be.
Okay, I don't even count this as really a true hack, because it was rather just a very simple idea. But back at my high school, which was quite a while ago, we managed to get an infinite loop kind of situation going with first-class BBS and email, because all the systems had first-class running on them. And, you know, they had a little ping sound whenever an email is received. And we basically went into one of the computer labs that has the computers arranged in a circular fashion and managed to get email forwarded, you know, automatically forwarded from each recipient onwards and forwarded back and going around the room in a perfect ring, so that you would hear the sound traveling around the room in like a wave. And that it would be fading, and this really cool effect, the delay was almost perfect, so you'd get this little sound that you could actually pinpoint the location traveling around the room faster and faster. And it got to the point where, according to our BOFH, it almost crashed the first-class mail server somehow, and it was rather interesting. But aside from that, my school was relatively devoid of true mischief, and that was really not much mischief to speak of, but anyway,
It's interesting.
There were some little script kiddie types that, you know, managed to find software tools and keyloggers and all sorts of things and start to wreak havoc, but that really doesn't really count in my book.
Where's that located? What school?
That's the Lovett School.
That's the Lovett School over in Buckhead.
Interesting place.
Well, of the limited audience, I think I'm the geriatric member here, and I'm 40. And the reason I came to this is basically when we were going to school, anything that happened was hacking, because stuff did not exist yet.
Yeah.
There was no legitimate computing stuff anywhere. So we built circuits out of neon bulbs, and we went to the local place that TRW and got their surplus hardware and yanked it apart and built our own stuff.
Hacking in the truest sense of the word.
Right. And that's why I came to this, because I have an ex-stepson, and through him I've been sort of involved in paying attention to what's been happening in the schools over the past 20 years, and things are way grimmer and way more fascist now than they were 20 years ago. And I'm really concerned about the what's happened to discourage kids from becoming smart and doing stuff and innovating. Because from what I see compared to 20 years ago, it's much more difficult to be bright when you're a kid. It's much more difficult to do anything and not be smushed out of existence. And I guess that's why I'm here. And since I'm 50% of the audience, I guess it counts.
Simple answer. Lawyers, politicians, and religious types who are also have a basically political types with an agenda of their own. And they see all of this as a, and probably quite legitimately, as a threat to their power.
Well, I think it is, but it's in the same sense that Nikola Tesla was a threat to the people who sold gas lamps. Okay?
Yeah.
What I've seen happening, I mean, not just recently, but I've become more and more concerned with this about all of history, is that, let's call it, for want of a better word, normative culture eats the products of very intelligent people and then destroys the people who produce those products. And so in any culture, and I don't know that there have been any exceptions in as long as history as I can see back, there's been this sort of love-hate relationship toward anybody who deviates. Frank Zappa said that without deviation from the norm, progress itself is impossible. And the very few people who wind up deviating in a way that improves the world in general usually get lumps for it. You know, the case of scientists that die penniless, there are more of them than those who prosper from their inventions.
You know, a lot of the problem is with scientists of today and all, a lot of it, a lot of the universities and stuff look at it, can you make a profit with it? And if they can't, they don't really try and fund it because there's no return on, you know, teaching for it. You know, they don't get money, they don't get the prestige of, you know, this great scientist made lots of money for selling this great idea or something like that, instead of just general, a lot of research stuff.
Also, partly explains why teaching has fallen to such ill repute in the university these days, especially in the last 20 years, when you have kind of an entrepreneurial academic trying to be what I will call a grant whore, which is basically going out to mostly private companies, and sometimes they'll get a grant from the private company, or they'll get one indirectly so that the company can sponsor university research, or the government will sponsor university research and so forth, and that gets held in such high esteem that the other side of the coin of scholarship, which is teaching, which I value teaching more than research as just my personal career option, but objectively it should be both sides of the same coin, and this is why teaching usually falls to the wayside, and it's considered a burden for teaching assistants like me to have to teach classes like this just because we're young, we're very inexperienced in the academy, and it's just something that's considered an entry-level position. I consider it a privilege.
Well, I like teaching very much as well, but it's interesting that you bring that up.
We are recording live. Thank you.
Because I was for 13 years at the Supercomputer Computations Research Institute at Florida State University as a research scientist. I'm not there anymore because the funding for research dried up. And basically around 1997, 1998, there was nothing there anymore. And you mentioned talking about making a profit. What I experienced is a lot of sort of scientists who were businessmen wannabes who went around in the halls saying, oh yeah, science has got to become more like business, but they weren't willing to do any of the good things that businesses do, like pay you money and give you benefits and things like that. And so the institute completely ate itself. But you're right about teaching. If you go to a research-oriented university, basically, any full-time professor has to teach maybe two courses a semester.
That's a standard, yeah.
Yeah. If you go to the community colleges, my mother is a professor at a community college in South Florida. It's a little bit better. You teach four or five classes and don't do an appreciable amount of research. But being in that situation, doing research for 13 years, you really do have to spend about half of your time just looking for money. It's mm-hmm. become very grim. And for a while, our situation was a little bit better because we were funded by the Department of Energy to be the non-classified, completely non-classified DOE site in the United States. But when that dried up, it was just impossible to do. And I'm really worried about the future because I don't know what's going to happen.
One thing you should look at is local school teachers of just general public schools make, on average, less than $30,000 a year.
Right.
Unless, like, I know one of my teachers in high school, when I was there, made, I think, $36,000 a year because he coached two different teams at sports, plus he was was director of some extracurricular club, and so that way he got a pay increase.
Right.
But that was his first 2 years of teaching that he made about $38,000 a year.
Yeah. Well, that's $38,000 is pretty high for this area from the teachers that I know.
Yeah.
But it's worse than simple money, because I know I've gone around. I just moved to Atlanta about a year and a quarter ago. And I've gone around to the public schools and said, hey, I know a lot of stuff. I'm certified as a teacher, as beyond the academic credentials. I'm willing to come to your classes and talk about stuff for free and teach kids something. And I haven't yet got a nibble off of that. They're just the academia, the administrations, the whole educational system as opposed to teaching are simply not interested in doing any of that. If anybody knows of the existence of some sort of enlightened person in this area that I could
Marietta
approach,
City
but
Schools.
I haven't found him yet. What?
Marietta City School System.
Marietta.
There are some people there that if you're interested in going up there, I could probably get in contact with some of the science teachers and stuff.
I think I would. Yeah. I think I would. Maybe I'll talk to you after.
Okay.
Only four people. I've been talking to this a lot. Maybe somebody else should.
Yeah. Well, you're only a quarter of the audience now, or a fifth.
You
come
other
up.
Questions?
We don't bite. Really, we don't. Okay.
You can hear better.
If you remember my comments earlier about one little hacking incident, I do want to say, just to absolve Lovett and their BOFHs of any discouragement of intelligent you know, curiosity was that our you know, MIS person did not, you know, punish anyone, did not report anyone, did not care, was merely amused at the consequences and what we managed to do. So it was more of the environment that was fostered was pretty supportive of just, you know, enlightened play.
How long ago was this?
Oh, this was back in, 94 or 5. I'm not sure.
But remember, Lovett is a private school.
Yeah.
There's a difference there between private and public.
Definitely.
As I understand, a very affluent private school.
Yeah.
We had a lot of nice hardware to play with, too. That's where I got my start in Macs, because we were almost entirely Mac-based, and we had a very supportive environment for that. And just the operator, I mean, the MIS person for that, the IT director, if you want to call that, was also the in charge of all the CS classes and a lot of the other things. And he was just in the Ham Radio Club, which I was president of, and it was just a really great environment because he was covering the technology front on all fronts.
What club?
The Ham Radio Club.
Ham Radio.
Amateur radio. And it was a great environment. Looking back, I wish I'd taken more advantage of it. So I guess it's one of the few schools that I've, you know, I don't know about the administration. They'd probably be a little bit more disapproving in there if they knew about everything that went on.
According to Merida City School Systems, I never existed outside the school because I basically did lots of stuff I was not supposed to, but I got full coverage by the principals. I go, yeah, go ahead and break into our systems if you can, tell us about it. Because they knew I wasn't going to do it. I actually showed them, hey, I broke into it. You know, here's all the student social security numbers. You know, because they did a really ancient program. They forgot to lock out the guest account. Well, actually they did, but they didn't have a logon file because it was a Novell network. And it booted, and when you logged in as guest, it would drop you to a DOS prompt. Well, it kept on saying bad command file name. It's like, it looks like just regular batch file. So Control-C, terminate batch drop. Yes, oh, looky. I'm at /m:/, you know, whatever, on the Novell server. It's like, whoa, cool.
I have an idea for miners and hacking next year, kind of like a practical application that I figured I would float your way. If we have the same layout next year, notice we're immediately adjacent to computer gaming.
Yes, we noticed that. All of them were in there playing games.
Yeah, I was probably drinking too heavily to think of this earlier, but how about a wireless hub slipped in there by someone who looks like a hardcore gamer next year, possibly jacked into their network secretly, and then we can have a very practical demonstration here next year of lack of Windows security?
Well, it's not designed for security. It's just designed as a isolated LAN segment.
Well, there we go. We can also show why security is important, even if you think it may not be.
Just like what?
As long as we don't break anything, because I'm related to the director of that.
No permanent damage, just a few harmless pranks that could tie into that, and, you know, back orifice a machine and pop up some fun messages.
Blue screening those machines, though, that's not difficult, so.
We're just taking hacking the piano to the next level.
Just something to consider.
Next year, we need to put the piano on very loud volume.
Well, next year, I think we should probably just clear it with the hotel so they don't cut power to that outlet on us and say, okay, you know, look. People enjoyed it while it lasted. Why don't you just let us go ahead and do a musical selection on the piano? Yeah, don't be jerks.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, a couple people of the local hackers community decided, hey, you know, this little player piano that's now closed upstairs has a floppy disk in it. Let's see what we can do with it. So we went on the net and found out it was a piano disk, model 128 player piano. Reads regular MIDI disks. So you just put it in, let it read it, and it will start playing whatever's on that disk, as long as it is formatted for the right way of the MIDI format of what it requires. And so they did, and it played a couple things until hotel staff found out and cut the power to it, and the next thing they know, it was closed, and power was pulled, and the breaker was flipped, and the disk disappeared. So
they may have some union regulations on that.
Probably.
That's probably why they did it, or else they left it
playing.
Kind of royalties issues too.
Do what?
Might have also some royalty issues too for having the right to be able to play the songs they usually use. You
know? Yeah, I think they're trying to play TV tunes and sci-fi tunes and stuff like that. So, any of our other guests on this half of the room have any questions or comments, any experiences you guys have had with any form of hacking, technology, and education? Yeah, information exchange of is what we're looking for, just to promote local discussion and enhance all of our ideas about everything.
I have an update on something I mentioned at the AtlantaCon a few months ago. There's a private school in Montgomery, Alabama, where this is the the public part is that a couple of nights ago it wound up on the big TV station in Montgomery, where the parents of a couple of girls are suing the school for all kinds of stuff. But the background and that's now public, but the background of that was that back in February, I think it was, and the scuttlebutt was that a couple of girls, this was right before cheerleader tryouts or something like that, decided that they wanted to flirt with some shy fella who they thought was handsome or whatever, so they emailed him some rather risque photographs of them on the school computer network. And the guy thought, well, this was pretty cool. And as it turned out, the way I heard on the news report, now that it's public, was that those photographs wound up being a bunch of screensavers on a bunch of computers in the school and were being traded around among the sports teams and this sort of thing. And the girls were, the girls were expelled. Or dismissed or something like that. And the school's still holding their tuition. I don't know all the background, but I thought, that this is the sort of thing that what the kids are doing. And so just an update on what I had talked about at AtlantaCon. A lot of folks think it's, the younger set thinks it's really funny, but the administrative types are not amused at all. I guess, and parents are sort of up in arms and this sort of thing. But the way I understand it is, it's a couple of pretty some girls with a rather aggressive sense of humor, shall I say? But it sort of backfired on them.
Okay, I guess I'll go on. You probably saw something I pulled up on the web. How many of you have been to somethingawful.com before? Something. Go to that a few more times. This is a parody webpage. That's usually on Miners and Hacking. We talk about dude speak, which is basically how those elite hacksaws, script kiddies, and basically who claim to be hackers. This is a pretty good example of how they would probably write it. Hello, fagwarts, and welcome to my new improved homepage. You read through the really bad typing here. And this is sort of an example of what not to do if you're sort of an elite hacksaw. If you are an elite hacksaw, this is what you do. But, yeah, it's like, constant misspellings about everything.
If somebody calls himself elite hacksaw, they are a script kiddie. They are usually doing bad stuff, like breaking into your school network, destroying, hey, let's flood the school network or, whatever. But as we know, good hackers, do something interesting, like make the mail go around in a circle in a room and make it ping out loud, stuff like that. But, one common thing you could tell if somebody's just a script kiddie is if they talk or write stuff out like this on websites or email, you'll know instantly that they are not anything at all, what they think they are.
Mm-hmm. This would be an example here. Let's say, for instance, they go and some lawyer files a letter against one of the aforementioned kiddies for some sort of violation of digital law. Probably this is what he would say. Oh, no, AOL, oh, your attack. Please save. Just this really ridiculous stuff. But, I don't know. This is kind of an indication that those who claim themselves in the elite hacksaw category, they don't really take federal laws that seriously. We're here, usually those who consider themselves to be responsible hackers, especially miners and hackers, for instance, is that they won't seek to alter federal laws, to overturn the DMCA, but the average script kiddie just doesn't care. In a lot of ways, that gives hackers...
Everybody that was up here in Hacking 301 is a good, responsible hacker.
What?
We think they're good, responsible hackers. Let me put it that way.
Yes. But in this case, when you have sort of this very nonchalant response that would be typically given when a federal violation has occurred, it just kind of reinforces the stereotype that hackers are just lawless anarchist malcontents, I guess you could say.
Well, they're noisy. Why should they not be?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, like, instead of... I mean, you know, there's, of course, nothing wrong with being a malcontent. That's how you get the system changed, but it's how you apply that malcontent to...
And they're very... they have a very inflated opinion of their of themselves and of their abilities. And what they don't realize is, in a lot of cases, it's becoming more and more that the script kiddies are up against professionals. And those guys are getting ready to drop the bomb on them. They do not realize how dangerous the territory is that they're treading on. Mm-hmm.
That's why I like hunting down spammers. You know, I have an interesting tale to tell of one spam hunt I was on. Some guy sent me spam, and it came with, like, this remove link and all. It's like, oh, this is interesting. I go to them just to see, you know, what's there and see if I can't report the abuse to their ISP or other provider. And, went up to their website. It's like, okay, you know, free vacation giveaway, whatever. You know, click here to remove. I went there, and it's like, okay. So I just did a regular port scan, you know, port 21 FTP. It's like, oh, look, anonymous FTP. Let's go in and see what they have. Well, they have, you know, in the, you know, remove list, they have all these email addresses. In the add list, they have all these email addresses of both. All publicly accessible. I tried it in my Netscape Navigator, and I went to, you know, put in the slash file name instead of, you know, the script it was running. It's like, oh, look, you can bring this up on the website, too. So I just made a small door. I went in and tried, okay, I wonder if they gave, you know, set it up wrong and made write permissions to anonymous FTP. They did. So I made a directory and moved all those files into the other directory. So it's just not... It didn't store any of those anymore. And then made that share hidden from public access again. So, well, or at least web access and all the fun stuff. So I just love doing stuff like that. Of course, I never officially did that. I'm just telling you, hypothetically. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But a lot of people you'll find in spam a lot of times is sort of the same category of those who you hate, or, you know, the people who forward you, here's how to get rich quick, you know, little Sally's dying of cancer, send, you know, for everybody you send it to, you know, you get it, the American Cancer Society gets a penny or 5 cents, whatever it is, but of which it may have been, they thought about it one time, the very first time, and somebody ran with that, and as a result, it's not true anymore. So I remember when I was in elementary school, some guy who wanted to be in the Guinness Book of World Records for having the most number of, what was it, origami shapes or something of some sort that had little letters in it. I don't remember exactly what the name of it was. And still to this day, he's still getting them because just the rumor keeps on spreading around the world that, you know, he wanted all of them, and he got... Craig sounds familiar. I don't remember his name.
Sick kid or whatever, is that, you
know? Yeah, it was something like that, yeah.
The kid's an adult now, he's fine, they gave him an operation, got rid of the cancer, and he still gets so many
I think they can't deal with it. I think a lot of this is, and this was the subject of a paper I wrote years and years ago, and my first job out of college, which was data center accounting and billing. And I was the guy who charged people money for using the computer. And that made me the second most hated person on all of campus, first most hated person being the person who writes tickets on cars parked in wrong places. I think a lot of this, I think spam email especially, but also the behavior that you see of the script kiddies and stuff. I think a lot of what now runs in the internet is running in a very warped economic basis. back when CompuServe charged $22.50 an hour to be for use, you really didn't have much of a problem with this sort of stuff, because if you were, there was a model of sender pays, and in the sender pay model, spam was just not a problem. Now what we have is we have
NetZero and Juno and stuff like that.
We have quote free internet. We have free this, free that. We have, and we also have things like, you know, flat rate billing and these sorts of things, and all of those are disincentives toward efficient utilization of the resources. And until that model of doing business gets sorted out, these problems that we're seeing with the services and with IT sorts of things are just going to keep on getting worse.
It was brought up earlier, I guess. I had to go take care of some things, but it was brought up while I was gone, that the educational system of the day, public versus private schools, how the private schools seem to encourage and foster a feeling of, you know, growth, of curiosity, of experimentation and whatnot, whereas it seems with the public schools, there is not so much as an interest in discuriosity, but it's
too much government regulation about what they can allow the students to do.
Okay, it would be the state government, the local government, then, you know, the national government, and what they can and cannot teach is basically what you're thinking of, where these kids are stifled from an early age. Is that what you would be thinking?
A lot of it, yes. Well, actually, most of it is just from the regulations of what they can, what they can't teach, how fast they can teach it, what has to be in, you know, the Georgia State has a massive list of what every, you know, curriculum study you can have in for public schools and what you have to teach in that, because they want to make sure everybody has the same thing. The problem is it's a nationwide thing also. Basically, the U.S. government says, you know, we want everybody in the, you know, U.S. to know these basic things. So they do it. Just local governments can do that in different exact times. And then you get in the other problems that there are some schools that have, in the more affluent areas of metro Atlanta, have a fair amount of money to toss at technology and stuff. Whereas I know from Marietta City Schools, it has a lot of money. They just bought a $50 million new high school, $20 million over budget from what the taxpayers paid for it or signed off on the vote for it, taxing on it. And brand new computer systems and everything. But the problem they had when I was there is that they did not have enough textbooks for all students, but they had enough money to go out and pay for $2,000 laptops for every school official or school staff.
Okay.
You know, nice brand new Dell, 15-inch LCDs, DVD-ROM drives, you know.
Basically a misappropriation of resources and whatnot.
Well, there are some teachers that I know that have used those laptops a lot and take them home and do grading and do PowerPoint presentations and do stuff like that all the time, especially in the summer.
Unfair reallocation of resources, then. Not maybe misappropriation in terms of people are using it for excessive personal growth.
But there's another thing,
but
it's not quite unfair, because, yes, the computers are needed, but the teaching of the teachers is a problem. That there were maybe three teachers in the entire school, Marietta High School, when I was there, that knew that much about computers. The rest could, you know, turn it on, type, get on the internet, and that was it. There was, you know, maybe three others that could actually do anything.
A significant lack of resources on the part of the teachers in terms of the know-how and the skill set and the skills required to teach something like that as a viable option beyond, you know, here's Mavis Beacon teaches typing.
Yeah. That has a lot to do with it, lack of research for that. But for the time teachers have, you know, with grading papers, doing all this other stuff, and try not to burn out from, you know, having to keep care of, you know, 150 kids a day, every other day for block scheduling, that's 300 kids, you know, for that semester, and all the papers they write, they have to read through that. When are they going to have time to play around? Unless they get something that's, you know, the school district puts out, and like, you are going to this, or here it is over the summer, you know. Okay. There's just not a whole lot of time for the teachers to really learn, and yet they've been thrown to this new technology. It's like, let's go. Let's, you know, do PowerPoint presentations. Let's go on the internet, do research projects for all different sorts of subjects. But the school district needs to take – you need to push your local school district and city council or whatever to push your local public schools to – we need education. Try and get them to get into basic 101 on computers.
Okay. Here's something All right, you mentioned the fact that the teachers are not having enough time. You know, they don't have the ability to go out and, you know, learn all this new stuff on their own. Has there ever been an idea of putting forth, you know, kind of like, you know, the local SECME club, you know, or a local Latin club or something, you know, maybe not something as advanced as, you know, Java and Perl for kids, but ever thought of would it be possible to encourage a domestic club in terms of local club in terms of a high school, encouraging them to say, hey, here we are, we're here to, you know, just, if you're interested in computers, here you go.
Yeah. A little after school. Are you talking about for the teachers or for students? Or for
primarily both? For the students, run by the students with, you know, official government school.
Yeah, there is something called TSA, Technology Student Association, which is, I know it's in Georgia and a lot of schools in other states. Mm-hmm. I was part of that. It wasn't so good because you have to have a good teacher to back it.
Yeah.
But it was the technology class, which they had different things for AutoCAD. They had different mechanical architectural drawing stuff. They had basic computer skills and other stuff like that. And you could go to conventions and competitions with that.
Was this actually taught within a classroom setting, or was this taught outside
this was
of the
a club.
Classroom?
This was extracurricular club.
Okay.
One thing, too, you run into is I've heard this said, for the cost of a computer will buy a whole lot of really good books, either textbooks or library books or whatever.
One computer, $1,200 with monitor, you know, textbooks are $50 a piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the same time, too, though, you know, if you think about what it took, the things that you know, how to read, how to write, how to do math, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, and these sorts of the things that you need to know how to do to graduate from high school and or pass various college entrance exams and all that sort of stuff. Do you really need a computer to learn that stuff?
No, you don't.
And, correct, well, you know, the teaching of technology is fine, but I think what has happened is you have all this media pressure for teaching Johnny to compute, you know, or basically teach Johnny how to use Word, and they still can't write a grammatically correct or logical paper. They cannot
2 + 2 = 5.
They can't do the basic math required, maybe to say put down carpet or ceiling tiles or wall covering in a room. So there are certain basic skills that are not being, you know, that I think are being sort of pushed aside in favor of satisfying certain corporate interests.
It's a trend.
And the old fogey teachers know about this. They don't need computers in their classroom. It gets in their way.
And Texas Instruments makes a ton of money every back-to-school season selling TI 80 through 92, 95 calculators.
Yeah, whatever. The latest supercomputer on it, you know, for our
calculator. For your little palm, you know, handheld thing. But my thing was I just decided not to use a calculator. Drove my teachers really crazy. It's like, show me the formula. You know, I might be able to remember it on the test day. I can't tell you I will remember it, but, you know, it's better than, you know, okay, I plug these three numbers in the computer, it graphs it out for me. And I just have to write down, you know, this point, and I write the answer down on paper. You know, there's no fun in that, or there's no actual learning.
Yeah.
You just copied in what the teacher told you to put in the calculator to begin with at the beginning of the semester, and you just press a button, and it does it for you.
That's going to come up and bite them hard when they get into college.
But there is usefulness there to that, you know, highly repetitive tasks. You know, you can use a computer. But the problem is they're not teaching the principles. They're teaching, here's how to get the results, and that's it.
Well, they experienced that same problem at the turn of the century. That was rote learning. The students were learning not really learning. They were just memorizing what was needed, the steps needed in order to get something done, and then they would spit out a, you know, stock answer. And we keep, this keeps coming up every 50 years or so. First it was 1912 in a study by, I knew this at one point because I had to write a paper on it in high school of all places. But there was a study put out in 1912, basically commenting on the lack of education being put into the students' actual learning of these processes. The actual, you know, they weren't actually getting an education. They weren't learning the three R's. Then it happened again 50 years later in the 50s when students, there was, you know, great social upheaval and people were very interested in, you know, getting the word out, getting the message, you know, fight the man, fight the power, and everything like that. But these students were now rejecting traditional education in terms of, well, we don't need the 3 hours because the 3 hours are by the man and they're fighting the power. But you basically had this whole generation that didn't speak grammatically correct sentences and, you know, were leet. But then, you know, it again comes up this, you know, 40 years later, but this time the major distraction tool is computers. Computers make everything easier. You know, computers are the wave of the future. You know, you can do it with a computer. Why do you need to do it yourself? It's so much easier, like you said. It's, you know, going back to what you had said in terms of learning the concepts and learning the ideas behind the math and whatnot. What I'm trying to say is that this has been a reoccurring problem. It's just like cocaine and America. America has had a cocaine problem since the 1850s. It just hasn't been really well known until the media picked it up and ran with it. Well, the media picked up computers and ran with it, and they made it into a trend, a fad, a pop-type thing. It's very popular to be associated with computers.
Yeah, get the latest and greatest, and that's it.
Yeah, the latest, the greatest, don't worry about the rest. There's been a lot of attention lately in the news over the last 10, 15 years, basically saying these kids, they don't know how to read, they don't know how to write, they don't know how to do basic math, but here they are doing all of these things with the computers and whatnot, and they're savvy in ways that, you know, book-minded kids aren't. What I'm saying here is that I'm advocating, yes, students, kids will need to learn how to use a computer. Should it be primary to their, you know, focus in the first 12 years of their education?
No. Definitely not.
No, but if a student is interested in doing something, he should have the resources, or she should have the resources available to them to be able to do what they want. I know that it's not possible with the way the current school system is outdated because so much bureaucracy is inherent to these systems. But there's just so many issues beyond just, you know, kids versus computers or books versus computers in terms of what they're learning and what they're needing to know. And it gets so much more than just one panel to cover.
Yeah. Anybody have any ideas on how you can change that type of stuff?
Well, I have some, actually, it's more of an opinion. The one thing that I think is paramount in technological education. This you know, basically builds on strong foundations. It's not to be a replacement for that. Is you need some sort of non-traditional approach to technology and thinking about technology, and this basically stresses every other thing you learn. I mean, the math, the everything. And, you know, you've got an isolated teacher here and there that just has this talent for, you know, challenging people and just bringing out every, you know, talent and aptitude you have and, you know, forcing you to use it to the fullest. But they're so few and far between, And it's just, it's more of a paradigm you just have to impart into these teachers to realize that, you know, you're not just going to be able to give the same old assignments out of the book. And, I mean, and this especially applies to technology. And this is almost like, just think of it as hacker education. I mean, you need some sort of program. I mean, if it's a, sort of like a gifted program or something, maybe in the public schools, to single out kids who have a, you know, insatiable curiosity for technology and, let's say, put them in an environment where they can just go wild and, you know, learn about the nuances of everything, and it'll stimulate every capability they have. I don't believe in teaching through computers. I think that that is, you know, by and large, a waste of our time. I mean, you can give, administer tests on computers to make things simpler. You can do that. I mean, Lord knows my university, you know, I go to University of Georgia, and I mean, we do, nowadays, most of our tests on our computers. And it's ridiculous, and even homework. I mean, I'm taking chemistry, and, you know, my first year of chemistry, all the homework was on the computer, which I didn't really care for at all. But teaching through is kind of a waste of our time. But if you want to use technology as kind of a tool to stimulate creative thinking, and creative thinking that not only uses your, you know, creative thinking in using math and algorithms and in hardware design, in, you know, the kind of homebrew hacking, hardware hacking, you really need to get some sort of program to put these, to go to, up to the science teachers and technology teachers, or you know, plant them in there so that they can challenge people. Because I know that I, going through high school, I had all sorts of personal interests and initiatives in involving technology that I was, you know, rabidly interested in, and I never really did much with them. And I've always resented that, and I always felt that if there was somebody there who was kind of challenging me all the way, that I would have actually followed through with a lot of things I intended to do and probably would have learned a lot from it and gained a lot of experience. So I think a really beneficial thing to have in education would be some sort of program to create these kind of ideas. Like, one of the neatest things I saw was my Linux club over in Athens brought in a TiVo and just showed, you know, the group of students and, you know, tech people over in Athens, the inner workings of the TiVo. If you could have a teacher, let's say, you know, realize that, hey, this machine is actually a little computer running Linux, and just, you know, bring things in every week or every month and just show them to the students. I mean, those kids would just go crazy with that. I mean, it would be stimulating so much interest and so many, you know, fantasies of projects. And you need that kind of thing, because if they don't get it outside the school, which they might, and I think most of the great technological minds in this world probably did get some, had some sort of mentor, had some sort of, like, guru that they were studying under. But, you know, really what would be great is to single out these kids in school and try to, you know, give them what they need, the kind of, you know, building blocks for, you know, fiddling with technology. And, I mean, that would also foster a much more beneficial attitude, pleasant attitude towards hacking in general, because they would see it more as a constructive thing. And I think that that's something we should look at.
Yeah, but about the only way you can do that is... for anybody here who can vote, look at your city council and then your school district, board of directors for your school district, and see who you can vote in and see where their opinions are, because if you don't like it, you can always vote for somebody else. Because that's the problem with especially public schools, is they can't really do anything. Private school can decide, hey, we're going to start doing this, you know, like Lovett or... Walker School in Marietta.
But not all the private schools are going to do that either. You have...
They have their own regulations of what they can do.
There are some other private schools, for example, the ones that are really heavily religious-based. There can be some issues there. The problem with the public schools is the problem with public anything is they have to answer to the public, and right now the public is afraid of mass communications, and one reason they're afraid is the large mass communications interests, newspapers, publishing companies, and this sort of stuff view these new technologies that we have access to as a threat to their profitability. They view it as a threat of some kind, and therefore they educate the public to view it as a threat. So we have a lot of, you know, there are a lot of opinions that get bandied about, and the public is overloaded and frightened, and that translates right straight over to what our government officials are doing and what the courts are doing. and government officials. I mean, things like school boards, city councils, these sorts of things. And that's exactly what's going on. And I would encourage people to do things like join USENIX or IEEE Computer Science, ACN, join some sort of professional organizations and sign on to their codes of ethics. Okay, the EFF is another good one. We, the technologically inclined people, need to get our voices out. The people who are not already have their lobby groups, and we need to start playing the game too.
Well, I think there might be an opportunity for something like that as the little tech economic slowdown happens. There hasn't been much of an opportunity for that because people were fat for so very long they basically didn't care. There was enough getting done, enough money coming down the pike. But going back to education, I want to mention one thing. It's very important not to conflate two very, very different things involving computers. One is using the computer as the sort of metal teat that is supposed to make everything else all better. The old mythological idea of a computer that can teach reading and writing and all that stuff, that's one thing. And I would agree with everyone who's mentioned it so far that that's a really dumb thing to do. I was involved in some distance learning about 20 years ago, but I learned that if you want to do teaching, you have to have a teacher who really has to be physically present. But the other thing is teaching about computers per se, and that's as a particular skill, the technology itself, which is what I'm interested in doing. And part of the reason is because fully half of the people I work with as a geek do not speak English as their first language. There are not enough kids growing up who know how to run this. And from historical perspective, what happens is that when we forget how to run things like industry, when we forget how to write programs, when we forget how to do cell animation, there are plenty of people all over the world that are willing to do it for us if we pay them money to do it. But we lose part of the noosphere when that kind of intellectual exercise becomes not something we do anymore. And I'd like to see, I want to see the kids do Perl 5. You know, I don't think that's too advanced. I think that for some kids for whom it's appropriate to do it, they should have access to that stuff. But I don't see any way to make it not be a subversive act. Because when you've got a school system and maybe you have two or three teachers who vaguely have an idea of what computers are, I don't see how it's doable in the current climate without having it be subversive. Teachers are going to, well, not teachers so much as educators and administrators, are going to be threatened by kids who know more about anything than they do. A good teacher isn't going to be threatened by that. But educators and administrators and school boards and maybe the public at large, they're going to be threatened by that. I've been a member of ACM for 18 years, I think, and I'd love to do something through them, but we're toothless. We've got our academic conferences, and nobody cares about that because they think it's ivory tower stuff.
Well, in a lot of cases, it probably is.
It is. It is. And that's something that needs to be maintained.
I guess for advocacy and in lobby sorts of things, I guess the big one that comes to my mind would be the EFF and probably to a lesser extent the IEEE CS, but especially EFF. Those people, basically, that's a whole bunch of lawyers, and they know how to get at the system. And, of course, there's another CPSR, Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility, would be another one. I would say EFF is the big dog out there right now. At the same time, too, though, as far as the perceived threat and all, I'm almost, but not quite old enough to know this, but it took Sputnik to be the kick in America's backside to wake them up. And so what happened, as best I can tell, was that that made the threat external, and it made for an impetus to identify the bright kids and find something and get, you know, let's push technology really, really hard. And they did that because whenever Sputnik launched, America became extremely frightened. And one of the things that resulted from that was complete reworking of things like science and teaching and curriculum reworking in the schools. And that happened in like 6 months, just a complete turnaround.
It's no accident that Sputnik was launched in 1957 and then the National Defense Education Act gets enacted in 1958.
And, okay, yeah, so you it's there. And so what I've seen of what the foreign kids are doing, we're cruising for having something like that happen again. I've seen in person what the Europeans and the are doing, and I've read about what is going on in Asia and
take a look at Japan. You know, that's why their suicide rate is so high over there among teens, is because it's expected that the students accomplish everything, and if you don't, you lose the honor of the family, basically.
Well, I mean, the Europeans too. I mean, the Germans and Russians, for example, is ones I'm thinking of, but also the French and British. At the same, well, the British, they, if you, truth be known, they probably invented computers to start with. But the Germans and Russians, I mean, start with this. The Europeans have a longer school year. Germany and Russia, I think is a 210-day school year. And they spend a lot of time going to school on Saturdays. And over here, you know, parents get to complaining at the school boards if their kid comes home and has 30 to 45 minutes of homework and the kid's whining about having so much to do. While over there, they think they're having a vacation if they have less than 3 hours of homework in a night. So it's a different philosophy over there. And I think a lot of that's cultural, if nothing else. And what's going to have to happen is something's going to have to wake up our culture to, to get that back on track, shall we say.
For those people who just came in, we are recording this. So if you have a question for the panels, please just raise your hand and, you know, I'll bring the mic right over to you.
And the Germans and the Russians, they don't have so many computers in the classrooms. They're still doing things with pencil and paper.
Or 386 computers at the latest.
And oh no, they're used, if they got computers, well, they'll have good ones. But
it all depends on how outlying you are compared to some places.
Yeah,
I don't know. I have a friend that came, became good friends with him. He's now a computer programmer. He's going to college. A third of the year, he's in a work study with some chip manufacturing company that makes DSPs for. They don't have an actual use for it yet. They're still in the production stage of it and manufacturing and figuring out what they want to do. And he's a programmer that's building a compiler for this chip that's not even been made yet. And a third of the year, he's back at home in the Ukraine. And he says, you know, any software you want, it's $1 per CD. Go to one of the places in the Kiev or anywhere else nearby, and, you know, you go to one of their flea markets for computers, it's $1 per any CD, you know. Be it AutoCAD or be it the oldest game in the world, it's $1 per CD. And they have massive piracy there, yeah. But then there's other things, like my friend for his science fair project, he did this whole thing in Linux that took using SVGA libs, he created a thing that you put in these plots, you know, like y equals mx plus b, the standard, you know, slope line intercept form for math, and would automatically change the values and in increments that you define, and would change it on screen, do sine waves, straight lines, whatever, of different types of formulas. And that was simple to him. And, you know, he actually came from a very privileged family over in the Ukraine that both his parents worked on computers. They could afford to send him to the U.S. to study, mainly because the Ukraine standard school system where he was located was not the best, but he was in the top of one of the top of his class. And over there, some of the times, you know, you're either pencil or paper, or you get good computer equipment. And a couple places you have, you know, low-end computer equipment. But they're also a lot more driven because what else is there to do? They don't have MTV. They don't have PlayStations as much. They don't have DirecTV over there, so they could watch the latest movies or stuff. They don't have massive movie theaters, you know, like the big, you know, 33-plex, you know, whatever.
So you're saying they basically don't have as much activities that they could be spending and basically using up their time with non-educational purposes.
They just see a lot more of a challenge to do stuff. Yeah, because they go to places, read books, and for some places in the world, what else is there to do? You have a computer that has internet access, even though it costs a little bit, but...
Would you?
But there again, that's also cultural. The culture of those countries places a very high premium on education and especially literacy.
Okay. Would you view then that, but basically, the difference between America and basically outside of America? Outside of America is a bit too large to generalize, I understand, but. We're just basically looking at this from a cultural aspect in terms of the culture between America and the countries that are definitely more proactive in their educational studies for their children. There's, you know, just the culture is more oriented towards either getting them out into the workplace or, you know, getting them an education. I'm not saying that, not for education, obviously. Everyone's for education. It's just... Is education a function of society, or is, you know, society and culture, or is society and culture a function, you know, of the education? I mean, which is first? Did, you know, since the education system here is, you know, it is a noticeable degree, the average standard is higher than that of the average Ukrainian, but, you know, by the same token, the average Japanese has a higher standard than the average American. I wandered. I had a nice little point and everything. But basically, the society that we exist in, does it, you know, encourage people to go out and pick up a book? Or does it encourage people to go out and watch a movie?
It all depends in some places where you are and what your specific upbringing is. Yes, you know, America's a spend country. You know, let's go out and spend money, you know, sort of like a disposal. You go out, look at all the, if you go out in the food court, look at all the food we throw out or something like that. We're just a spend. So we go out and have fun because we have the money. And yet a lot of people see that as, you know, we have the money, we have time, let's go do it. Why not? So, that's our cultural aspect. Yet in the same token, you have to have somebody that pushes the interest to begin with from, you know, the moment you're born to start thinking, you know, let's count how many dishes are in the cabinet or whatever, you know, just basic stuff. And if you can get somebody to begin with interested, which half the time it happens, half the time it doesn't, because it actually takes generations to accomplish for that thing. Because, like, my parents had parents that were really into, my grandparents were engineers. And so, as a result, both my parents were interested into learning and stuff like that. And as a result, my sister and I are both interested in learning. That's going to keep on going. But by the same token, I know friends whose parents, you know, it's like, oh, okay, they're just... I mean, they don't want them in the house anymore. They don't know what to do because their parents didn't know what to do. And for any change that we do, it's going to take generations to overcome basic learning problems. And for culturally, you know, America is a spend. Let's go out, have fun, a lot of stuff. And other countries, yeah, we'll focus on education.
Yeah. Talk about encouraging people. And, you know, I hear from you a lot of my background. My father, at least, was technical, and I got inspired early and knew pretty much when I saw the New York World's Fair in 1965, I was 3 years old, what I was going to do for the rest of my life. But I paid a lot of costs for that. And I think that even before we get to the point of whether people are encouraged and inspired, we have to deal with the fact that in this particular culture, there is a lot of hostility. There's sort of a stupidity chic, which is never far from the surface in the United States. If you go even as places as close as Vancouver, Canada, you won't find this as much. But let's say some kids get inspired into technical stuff. They're going to pay a price for that. They're going to be called nerds. They're going to be called geeks. They're going to be viewed sometimes as the perfect person to get the answers on the test, but never the perfect person for a date. And that's a very bad thing. We can inspire a lot of kids, but the ones who are socially clever are going to try to be dummies simply so that they don't get tortured like this. And I think that we have to.
Well, it makes them very cool because they can get out of doing a lot of stuff.
The whole concept of cool, that if you're a geek, you're not cool. But I think that indicates it's not simply a matter that, okay, they don't have TV in the Ukraine and so they have to do this, or there's more time for them to do this. It's if somebody does it in the Ukraine, they're not necessarily going to get tortured by their peers for doing this. And I also want to be, I'm going to shut up in about 2 seconds, but I want to say that the two groups of, or there are, yeah, two basic groups of people from other cultures that I see most in IT. And those are, of course, South Indians and Africans from West Africa and South Africa. I see a lot of people from those places. Not so many Japanese. I work with one guy from
Estonia.
They all
make chips and stuff like that and PlayStations and anime.
What?
They all make anime and the PlayStations.
Oh,
yeah,
sure. But that's an outside industry. But of the people that come here and specifically do work in this country, on visas, I see mostly Indians and Africans. And so maybe we can look at those cultures and see what it is they have we don't.
I think a lot of that might have to do... I was recently in the Ukraine for a while, and I do not recall having seen a non-Caucasian person anywhere. Naturally, because, Caucasia, ancient Caucasia is the Ukraine. That's what they're named for. That's the Caucasian mountains are part of Ukraine. India, too, I think a lot of this might have to do with the fact that they are so... homogeneous with their cultures. In here we have America. It's a big melting pot. That may be a factor, but I'm not a sociologist. I'd probably pass that over to Lothar.
Societal foundations of education, yes.
Yes. We've gone through every other tract, but as far as international comparative education goes... I don't know. Sometimes I think American education sometimes gets a bad rap because there are some things that can't be... Sometimes we use tests to compare. For instance, there's a test up in the 60s that's still used today to measure math and science achievement, whereas there are very narrow things about math that are taught to the Japanese, but very broad things are taught to Americans. Japanese tend to excel in very calculation-oriented mathematics, but problem-solving mathematics, Americans actually do quite better. But that doesn't really get reported out to the news media, or the news media knows about it, but they just choose to ignore it. So we have to kind of keep that in mind as well, is that America is unique in its education system in that we can promote a very sort of decentralized give-and-take hacker ethic that can be applied to American education that probably can't be applied to other countries.
I know Scott here is telling us me to close up. One quick, you know, I just want to take a quick ending poll here of a couple of questions. I'm just curious about how many people here are still in a school setting, be it high school, college, whatever, or currently, I would put, either involved in direct educational studies, I guess you would call it. So one, two, three.
Third of the crowd.
Oh, yeah, about a third of the crowd. That's good. How many people are active in your local government setting?
Government what?
Local government, be it a civic organization, attending meetings of any sort, or attempting to be proactive in, as a citizen.
2,600 counts, doesn't it?
I was thinking more of direct, not quite of a group of peers of technology, but more of direct activities with those in the leadership positions of local government.
Well, that too.
Yeah. So I figure another third. Yeah. Okay. Just roughly a third are involved in direct educational, a third are direct in government. Okay. I was just curious. Besides, this is all being recorded for prosperity, so in years future, we can all see, oh, lucky, maybe it's two-thirds for everything, so. Okay. I'd like to thank everybody for coming, though, and we may have this panel again next year or whenever. Maybe we'll try and crash computer gaming for a short time so they can, you know, drag all them away from the computer screens to come over here, so. Yeah. Thank you.
Good job. Good question.
If you just want to email me, my email address is John Paul.